Committee Chair for Infrastructure in the Western Cape Provincial Parliament. I am not alone. I am with the members, and I saw one member online. So if you can introduce yourself for the record, I will appreciate that. Over to you, members.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members, and good morning to officials. My name is Isaac Mbulelo Silego, and I'm a member of the committee. Thank you very much.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, officials. My name is Sean August, member of the Standing Committee.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody. My name is Khalil Barankis. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Derek America. I'm standing in for member Kayla Murray.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I have some apologies from Member Murray, Member Lily, and Minister Simas. They're not going to join us today, but we are quorum will continue. And just to my right-hand side, if we can introduce ourselves to know who has joined us today, starting with you, HOD.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Jackie Gooch. I'm the head of department for the Department of Infrastructure in the Western Cape Government.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members and colleagues. My name is Nana Mhlongo. I'm the DDG responsible for policy within the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure.
Member Maran, good morning. If you can introduce yourself.
Morning, sir. Good morning, everyone present. My name is Pat Maran, alternate member of this committee. Thanks.
Thank you very much, sir.
Morning. My name is Yusuf. I'm an ordinary member.
Morning, Chair. I'm Natasha Fisser. I'm a researcher here at Parliament.
Thank you very much. And later we'll be joined by Honourable Member Yako Lont, who will be doing a briefing as our permanent delegate from the National Council of Provinces. So he's going to join us a little bit later. I just want to find out, because I've been hearing the noise of the laptop. Are we online, Shami?
It's online, Dave, but I can't seem to access the meeting platform now. I don't know what's going on. But I guess we can continue without the laptop.
Okay. I'm going to suspect that Siraj, you are watching where you are. If you can maybe make your way to the chambers to check if everything is okay, we'll appreciate that. But we are going to continue as it comes in. Okay, per our program. The first, it will be the National Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Members, as we are going to be briefed with the referred expropriation bill. So we've got the NCOP, we've got the National Department, we've got our legal advisor, and we've got the PO that also we are going to request if they also they can make themselves available in the chambers, because we are going to appreciate to engage with them for the way forward as we make the resolutions from the committee. With that being said, I'm going to hand over from the National Department to be the first one that does the briefing about the bill. Over to you, Mama.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you to the members. I'm not sure, Chairperson, if we're going to be assisted to project the presentation. Is it? Okay. So perhaps in the meantime, while we are, I'm going to request my colleague to take us through the presentation, but the copies. So we I think we can run. I think there's an extra pack here that you can share with yourself.
Thank you.
Pleasure. So we can run, Chair. Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity and the invitation for the department to come and present the expropriation bill, B23 of 2020. Before I invite my colleagues, just to explain, Chairperson, in terms of the purpose of the bill, it seeks to outline how expropriation must be done by organs of state. So what we will be presenting to the committee this morning is then the process and procedures that are to be followed in terms of the expropriation. So with that, I'm going to invite, through your permission, Chair, to my colleague to just take us through the presentation, and we can take questions thereafter. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, once more. Let me preface my presentation by saying that we have been requested to base it on the memorandum of advice that was provided to us by counsel dated 9 February 2023. So the presentation comes out of that memorandum. And the second point is that you would have seen that the presentation is just a few slides long. It is a very condensed summary, if I may say so, of the key aspects of the bill. Having said so, let me go straight to the presentation. In terms of the contents, we will look at the overview and just a short process of the bill. The overview of the expropriation bill B23-2020 is that, as we all know, the Expropriation Act 63 of 1975 is currently still law, although it is old order legislation. The transitional provisions in Schedule 6 to the Constitution validates it as law. And that being the case, the courts, when they apply and interpret the provisions of the 1975 Act, does that in harmony with the provisions of Section 25 of the Property Clause in the Constitution. We must just emphasize that the 1975, as I've already indicated, this old order legislation, it was not done or passed in accordance with the Property Clause. So there would be some glaring gaps in that piece of legislation. That is why the expropriation B23B of 2020 was purposefully developed to give effect to the Property Clause. The Property Clause serves as the foundation for the substantive and procedural aspects of the bill, which is simultaneously aligned to the principles of the Constitution. The bill governs administrative and judicial expropriation. That means administrative law will apply to decisions in terms of the proposed law. An example of a judicial expropriation that we may cite would occur in terms of the Land Reform Labor Tenants Act of 1996. You may proceed to the next slide. As I've already indicated, the bill is of an administrative nature, and that means that it is a requirement that it must also comply with the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. And the administrative justice provision in the Constitution, Section 33 of the Constitution. Some of the main principles and rules that will obviously apply to decisions that are taken in terms of this bill would be, for instance, that decisions must be procedurally fair and rational, which implies that a person must be given the right to be heard or to make representations before a decision is taken, and that decisions must be reasonable, taking into account all relevant factors and considering all affected interests to reach an outcome, and that decisions must be permitted by a law of general application. So the bill would be such a law of general application. The Constitution permits expropriation of property only for a public purpose or in the public interest. Public purpose expropriation include, for instance, building of a dam, a road, a hospital, or if, for instance, Eskom wants to build a power station, those would be instances of public purpose. And public interest is couched in very broad terms deliberately in the Constitution, and it says that it includes the nation's, the state's commitment to land reform and reforms to bring about equitable access to natural resources. And if you recall, the genesis of this is that in the interim constitution, public interest was not expressly stated. And there were problems when land reform had to be implemented, specifically as far as it concerned restitution claims. Because you recall, it was the state that was acquiring property and passing it on to a private person. And there was litigation that ensued out of that, because a lot of people were being whose property was being acquired for restitution purposes were complaining that restitution is not in the public interest. It is for that reason that it was expressly stated now in the Constitution of 1996. There's a specific mention of public interest in the 1996, because it comes from that history in the interim Constitution. The bill sets the framework for public purpose and public interest expropriation. You may proceed, okay. Other functionaries are empowered to expropriate for public purposes relevant to their respective functional areas of legislative competence, e.g. Education. You'd also have SANRAL, for instance, where they expropriate to build roads. You'd have, I've already mentioned, ESCOM, the Department of Land Reform, Rural Development and Land Reform would expropriate for land reform purposes in their different programs, redistribution, tenure reform and restitution, and a whole host of other organs of state possess the authority to expropriate, which is granted by their respective pieces of legislation. And as the next bullet indicates, clause 3 of the bill empowers the minister responsible for public works to expropriate for public works related purposes. Other expropriating authorities derive those powers from their own legislation. So if an organ of state does not have those powers to expropriate, obviously they will have to request the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure to expropriate on their behalf, because they would not have an instrument that empowers them to expropriate. The next step would be the process in terms of the bill. The expropriation method of the bill is more detailed than that of the Expropriation Act 1975. And as I've already indicated, this is partly because of, the budget requirements. The first step that has to be satisfied is to ascertain the public purpose or public interest needs identification. Clause 5 requires the expropriating authority to investigate the suitability of the property for the identified need. The rights and vesting that attach to the identified property must be determined, namely ownership, servitude, restitution claims, and so forth. The list goes on. It's not a closed list. So during the investigation, the various types of rights would have to be, rights and interest would have to be identified. The rights and impact inquiry is intended to assess the suitability of the property for an intended expropriation. Characteristics of the property are also relevant to assess suitability. And during this step, you'd get inspectors or valuers or other professionals being involved, depending on the type of an expropriation, whether it's for an immovable property or for any other type of expropriation. So you would involve the relevant professionals depending on the type of expropriation involved. During the investigation phase, the owner or occupier's privacy must be respected. They should be consulted to obtain information about the property and possible unregistered rights in the property. In the case of land, the municipality should also be engaged to establish the zoning, outstanding property rates, other charges, and the availability of services. This information is crucial for the assessment of suitability of the property. Certain immovable property may be subject to mortgage. It will be important to identify the mortgagee and how much is outstanding on the bond. So mortgage rights are just one of the different types of rights that may attach to the affected property that must also be identified and attended to. The next step has to do with the notice of intention to expropriate. The expropriating authority must take into account the clause 12 factors to calculate just and equitable compensation where the property is deemed suitable for expropriation. So having done the needs identification, you would now have formed a view whether you want to proceed with expropriation or not. And at that stage, if you want to proceed with expropriation, you also, the first thing that you have to bear in mind is clause 12 that deals with the issue of compensation and whether, you'll pay compensation or you will not pay your compensation. And if you pay compensation, what would be the form of compensation that would unfold? Notice of intention to expropriate in terms of clause 7 must be served on everyone who has an interest in the property. This notice invites interested parties to accept offers of compensation, request more information, or dispute the offer of compensation. The notice of intention to expropriate is not an invitation to purchase due to the compulsory nature of the acquisition. The notice should nonetheless give the potential expropriatee the chance to agree to an amount of compensation. Mediation could follow where there is no agreement on compensation between the expropriating authority and the party to be expropriated. If mediation does not yield results, a court must decide the offer of just and equitable compensation. So issues around mediation and so on are dealt with in terms of clause 19 of the bill. The next step is the notice of expropriation. Clause 8 regulates the issuing of the notice of expropriation where there is agreement or decision on the amount of compensation. The notice states when ownership passes. The notice also identifies the date when the right to possession passes. Physical control of the property can only be exerted when the right to possession takes place, and usually it's after the date of expropriation. The issuing of the notice of expropriation will give the expropriating authority the right to claim proof of ownership in the form of a title deed. So this relates to registration of transfer of the affected property. One of the important aspects that we thought we should deal with separately has to do with the issue of possession of expropriated property. The expropriated property may, by arrangement, retain possession until the date on which the right to possession passes. So you've got two aspects to the property. You've got ownership, which passes when the notice of expropriation is served. And you've got possession. Possession can also pass simultaneously with ownership when notice of expropriation is served. Or the two can be separated by agreement, where the parties agree that, okay, ownership passes, but then you may continue to remain in possession of the property until a particular date that would be specified between the two parties. The expropriated person will be responsible for paying municipal charges, municipal rates, charges, and maintaining the property. That is, you know, if this person continues to remain in possession of the property. The expropriated authority must pay the compensation to the expropriated person before the date on which the right to possession passes. Compensation claims. The expropriating authority may reduce the amount of compensation agreed or decided by a court in proportion to the value of the late claim to pay any person who belatedly claims and proves a right to the expropriated property. So there would be situations where during the identification process, some people may not have been identified, or they may not have exerted their rights to the affected property. So as at that time, when, you know, identification would have been completed, it is possible that some people may emerge when the deal is almost about to be wrapped up or wrapped up. So this requirement is that the expropriating authority would be obliged to make provision for someone who comes late to make a claim. In other words, the compensation due in respect of the property would be dealt with in proportion to the number of claims, entitlements to that property. The expropriating authority may deposit the compensation with the master of the High Court where there is a dispute about who is entitled to receive compensation. The next step which we thought is important has to do with agent expropriation. Clause 20 of the bill provides for agent expropriation. Agent expropriation may be required in an emergency where the state requires to use property temporarily. The normal expropriation process is short-circuited by an agent expropriation. An agent expropriation is temporary and may not last for more than a year. Compensation must be calculated and offered as soon as reasonably possible within 30 days from date of expropriation. The expropriating authority may commence with an expropriation of property at any time during the temporary use of property. This is provided for in clause 29. Another important step in the process is the withdrawal of expropriation. The withdrawal of an expropriation may be achieved in terms of clause 21 if it is in the public interest or the reason for the expropriation is no longer applicable. The power to withdraw an expropriation must be exercised within 3 months from the date of expropriation. The effect of withdrawal is that it restores the affected parties to the position they were in before the expropriation. The expropriating authority is liable for reasonable costs and damages incurred by a claimant. Now, there is an innovation of the bill, which is the expropriation register. You will recall that in the current act, there's no requirement for an expropriation register. In terms of this requirement, all expropriations must be recorded in an expropriation register, and such a register would be open to the public. The last points to make is about several general provisions that are contained in the bill, and these deal with issues about delivering and publishing notices, language of communication, electronic and communication, extending time periods for steps in the expropriation process, consequences for non-compliance with the Act, and transitional provisions. All those are contained in clauses 22, 23, 25, 27, and 30. That brings us to the end of the presentation, and thank you, Chair and Honourable Members.
Thank you very much. I thought that we are going to do the presentation and after get the NCOP, but I see Member Long is not here yet. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I sent you a message saying that the presentation will be done by the department. Yes. Yeah, National Department. I think he was just going to be present as well. And if there was something from his side that he would have wanted to say, then he was going to say something.
Yeah, that's what I thought, that maybe there might be something that you would want to talk to us about. But I can take the try to find out if from the Department of Infrastructure, the province, it's, HOD, is there anything that you would want after listening to share with us, and then also from the Premier, is there anything before I go to the legal advice of the Parliament?
Through you, Chair, I have one question, if I may, through to our national colleagues. The Department of Infrastructure would be responsible, given the roads portfolio, as we do or used to in Transport and Public Works, we would expropriate property for road purposes and go through the necessary process. Due compensation is paid. Let me just put that up in terms of the current legislation and so on. I'd like to, if I may, ask a question to the national colleagues around how that would fit in to what is here. I've seen a slight difference or change in what has been presented today compared to what was previously in the bills. So if I may just get clarity about how provinces would go about expropriating property, particularly if I ask for road building purposes at this point. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And for Department of Premier, any question, contribution or?
Nothing at this time, Jay.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. to add to the HOD's question so that someone we can deal with the questions. Member Brinkes, I recognize you.
Thank you very much, Chair. My question is not to add to the HOD's question, but it's a different question. Thank you, Chair. No, Chair, thank you very much, and thank you to the department for the presentation. I would just like to bring one issue to the attention of the department, that our national colleagues. For our Muslim community all around South Africa, we have what we called our prayer places, our churches, which is called mosques. In terms of our religion, our mosques, in terms of who it belongs to, the ownership of the mosques, there's a term that we use in the Islamic religion, which is called waqf. Waqf is a term that simply means that when any piece of property is called waqf, then it simply means that that property does not belong to any person or any Muslim for that matter in the community, but in fact that property belongs to God. It belongs to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And I would just like to ask the department that in terms of the Muslim religion, how much will that concept of waqf be respected, and in terms of expropriation. Yes, Chair, thank you very much. That is just my first round.
Thank you very much. Member August.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you very much for the presentation. I want to just take you to page 12, the second tick. It says the power to withdraw an expropriation must be exercised within 3 months from the date of the expropriation. So what if there's changes in whatever reason that we need to withdraw the expropriation and it's surpassed the 3 months? Is there space for movement? Can you give perhaps more clarity on that, please?
Thank you very much. Member Maran?
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. And as said by the presenter, that the old Act of 1975, law, and that particular Act made no provision for either public purpose or public interest. And if we look, for instance, at Section 25 of the Constitution that speaks about property, it clearly states that property can be expropriated for that particular. Now, it also, in the Constitution also said, especially when it comes to restitution, you can only go back as far as 1913. Now, here is the coin in the sun. Who has been dispossessed of the land long before 1913, from the 1700s and the 1800s, and basically killed. How do we deal with that particular issue? As I've said, because the constitution of this country only allows you to go back as far as 1913 in terms of restitution. That's the one. Second one, advocate. Whether there's case law, where a court basically, or where there was a decision in terms of what is fair compensation, whether there is case law where compensation was basically like a null rent. And basically a decision by the court that null rent is fair, whether this case law, if there was such a decision basically in the past, where they have determined that it's null, it's zero. Because if you look at Section 25(8) of the Constitution, it clearly states that. And if you look at the provisions within that section, whether it's a fair compensation and all those type of things, what you want to use it, 25(8) clearly states that all of those provisions must not stop to get to that particular purpose, whether it's for public purpose, whether it's for public interest. 25.8, I'm not sure how it reads, but it says that actually, but it basically says it must not stop that particular process to take place. Yeah. Okay, let me stop there for now.
Thank you very much. And Member Seleko?
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. No, Chair, mine is just a clarity-seeking questions. One would firstly be like the desire to expropriate. Where would the desire arise from? What mechanism would one have to consider? Or it can be just Maran, who is my neighbor, who has a beef with me, and just would feel that my land must be expropriated because, you know, an advocate for a need, you know, for interest to develop for something to be done on my land, and then he would want to expropriate it because he does not like me. So what mechanisms would, you know, just practically now, how does one derive to a decision to say, you know, the land that belongs to member August that has been there for 25 years must be expropriated because someone somewhere has come to a desire to say, I want to build a sports field or I want to have a road that goes through his property, you know, and I just want to understand the process. And secondly, yeah, I understand the issue of compensation. And one would want to know when one would have to deal with the issue of compensation. What are you going to consider? Are you going to consider the valuation of that particular property at that particular stage? Or are you also going to consider the sentimental value of that particular property when you compensate? And should there, if I don't want my land to be compensated or expropriated because of sentimental value, or because we are a diverse country, and some of the land that we would want to expropriate, they are graves of our grandparents and grandmothers and kids and ancestors. And then if I feel I've got sentimental value on my land, how does one balance the need for expropriation and the need for sentimental on the connection you have on that particular land? So if I don't want to sell, what happens there? And then lastly, up to where does one would one explain or try to say define property? When you talk about property, are we talking about the land? What is it that we are talking about? Because this is my property. And everything that is on my land is my property. So I just want those few questions, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Before I give Premier, I just want to find out what qualifies agent. Because if you're going to say agent expropriation, but you give it a year, it to me doesn't sound like it's something that we can say it falls under the agent, unless maybe you unpack for us to understand the these terms of the agent expropriation. And another one, it will be, now, if you get in a space where you have, and I'm trying to think deep on the example of, let's say, Sandrift, and then you are going to expropriate there, it's where it has been a nature reserve, and then you want to do something, you have to expropriate. Who's going to get the compensation? Because it's the Cape Nature, it's the government, the land, and you are going to give the responsibility to the Department of Infrastructure, to the Minister of Infrastructure. How do you, the negotiation, how do you empower the department itself to talk to the illegal land invaders on the piece of land to make sure that you can move them? So in principle, I'm trying to understand that the bill, where does it really qualify? Who can receive the compensation? Who can't receive the compensation? How do you unpack that expropriation term for us to understand that if you have to expropriate as a government for public service, how do you interlink to the scenarios also? Then also within the municipalities for the special planning. Also, now we are busy, I think, with the legislation that will be coming for the Koi and the Sons, and they've been talking about the ownership of the land, the cost attached to the, where is the money going to come from? Because we sometimes receive the bills, but when we ask the question of the cost attached to this bill, where is the budget going to come from? Because immediately when we talk about the Koi and the Sons for them, they've been talking about the land that is theirs, that when you are going to address the issue of the special planning that we want to champion with the Department of Infrastructure, there need to be the money that will be coming from somewhere. I mean, as a member doing an oversight, I know already HOD doesn't have the money that is enough. Now, the bill might be what is needed, but the cost attached to this, if you can understand, have an understanding that where is the budget that is allocated to address this, we'll appreciate it. The Premier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Apologies for the late question. Two things. I note that the legal opinion that was provided by the colleagues from National refers to a previous memorandum prepared by Advocate Budlander, SC. I'm hoping that the colleagues would be prepared to share that with us as well, because that would also, I think, just assist us in seeing what some of the thinking was, especially the legal thinking around some of the aspects of the bill. The second point is that the national colleagues might not know how we collate comments on draft national legislation, but it is a collaborative effort in that we, for an important bill like this, legal services manages that process. We then also provide legal technical input into the draft legislation, and we collate comments from all the provincial departments who would like to comment on the draft legislation. The comments are collated into one set of comments submitted in this case by the under the signature of the Premier as the Western Cape government's comments. Now, this is obviously also our constitutional mandate in terms of the Constitution, and in the spirit of good intergovernmental relations, which is, you know, where how those comments are actually put together and submitted to the national departments. Unfortunately, we hardly ever get a response to our comments, which makes it very difficult because we don't understand, as in this case, we've sent through, I think the latest set of comments was in excess of 30 pages, and it would really assist us if we could get a response to those comments so that we are placed in a position to also respond to our clients as the provincial departments and the provincial executive as to why our comments were not taken on board. Because as I said, they come from a technical point of view, both legal and the provincial departments that would inevitably have to implement the legislation. So the comments are sent to assist as well. And it's not always understood why the comments are not taken on board. So if we could request, it would be very useful if our colleagues at National could perhaps just answer to those comments, and we can just better understand and revert back to our clients as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it's all I'll hand over back to the National Department if there's responses.
Thank you, Chair. I've tried to scribble down some of the questions. I hope I've managed to capture them. Most of them are very interesting, and there are many of them. I will try my best to respond to those that I can now, and those that require us to go and do some more work, we will definitely do that. Okay, I will start with our colleagues in the province, the Department of Infrastructure, in terms of how, the question is, how would the process unfold for them if they were to be required to expropriate. You would have heard when I was presenting in the presentation that, organs of state also possess the power to expropriate in terms of their own legislation. So I should think that you probably have got a provincial piece of legislation that you use to expropriate. I'm going to respond by way of an example. Years back, I used to work in the restitution program, in the land reform restitution program. I worked for about 10 years there. In the Restitution of Land Rights Act, there is just one provision that provides for expropriation. It's Section 42E. What the department did was to go and develop their own expropriation process, which complies with PAJA. So they've got a booklet that guides them on how they would go about to expropriate for restitution purposes. So I should think that if you have an empowering legislation, by all means, you are entitled to have your process for your own purposes to expropriate, as long as it's not at odds with the framework legislation. So I think that should answer that. The next question is about the Muslim religious rights and how the concept of wakaf would be respected. I look at it in terms of rights enshrined in the Constitution. Religious rights are rights in the Constitution. And property rights are also rights in the Constitution. Now, if you look at broadly at our Constitution, how you give effect to the different competing interests, this is even what is advised should happen in terms of this bill, that you would look at the situation on a case-by-case basis and use a balancing of rights approach to look at the public interest and the interest of those affected. That is what the Constitution says. And then look at all circumstances, including those circumstances that are specified in the Constitution, and then take a decision. So I don't think in respect of a mosque in Cape Town, facts and circumstances would be exactly the same for a mosque in the Northern Cape, although the concept of wakaf would apply maybe to both of them, but the situation could probably differ here and there to an extent that there could be a bit of differences in respect of the outcome of the decision. But basically, at the end of the day, every decision, if it is taken in terms of the expropriation bill that we're talking about, can be taken on review. Can be taken on review to the court or through a mediation process. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. We cannot say this is what will unfold, this can be the decision and so on. But one thing for sure is that the Constitution grants religious rights, grants the right to the property, and there has to be a balancing of rights, you know, to look at all the affected parties and come to an outcome. So I should think wakaf would be taken seriously in terms of the Constitution, because there are rights attaching to that in terms of the process. The next question, what I captured here is about changes and an extension of time. I don't know who was asking that question. If you could just, for my benefit, just repeat it.
Over to you, so you can give the clarification.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question was on page 12, where you said 3 months. And I asked, should they, if anything happens and you don't make it for the deadline of 3 months, will there be an extension, or anything happens after the 3 months where you need to reconsider? Is there space for that? And perhaps you could give some more clarity on that specific issue.
You probably are talking about the withdrawal of expropriation. Off the top of my head, I know there's a provision in the bill that provides for extension of time under, you know, various instances. So this would also apply wherever there is a time frame. That time frame can also, in terms of that provision that provides for an extension of time, depending on the facts and circumstances of the situation, be looked into and a decision taken accordingly. Okay. Is there case law for... Oh, the next one has to do with the issue of the Khoisan and the 1913 cut-off date. As I've already indicated, I've worked in the restitution program those years when we were the first group which actually started negotiating restitution claims. And unfortunately, in terms of the Restitution of Land Rights Act, it is a limited process. You've got that 1913 cut-off date, and then you've got the closing of lodgement date. So it is limited in that sense. There was an amendment that was passed by Parliament, which is now, it has been suspended because there was a case on that, in respect of the opening of the arrangements and so on, to extend that period. Because previously, it was opened and until, I think, 30th of December 1998. That was the first time you could lodge claims And then there was an extension which was, there's an amendment which was done, but again, there was a court case. So it's still not a finalized issue. But there are claims, I'm definitely sure that there are claims that have been lodged even after the amendments. It's just that they've suspended the process of processing those claims. The 1913 cutoff date, I know it's a very burning issue in the country. It's a political kind of a burning issue in the country. People have got various views about it and so on. When I was still working in the restitution program, there used to be debates, especially even from the NGO sector around this issue. And most people used to say, the problem is that if you look at the date, it's 19 June 1913. That is the date on which the Land Act, the Land Act, started to operate. 19 June 1913. So the legislative discrimination started from that time. That is one of the reasons that has been indicated as why that cutoff date was chosen by the powers that be. Others talk about avoiding creating uncertainty, because going back you would not know who's who, because there are a lot of dispossessions which took place arbitrarily and across the board using different forms of instruments whose records you cannot get today. So that uncertainty is also another problem. So that is as far as I think I can go to respond to this one. The next one is the issue around case law for compensation. Yes, there is case law that I know is there. There is case law in the Land Claims Court, and there is one case that I remember, I forget the name in the Land Claims Court, which deals specifically with the stages you have to go through in when dealing with the issue of compensation, what aspects you look at and so on. There's another case in the Land Claims Court that I remember very well, which deals with the issue of sentimental value and so on, because that would fall under factors that you have to take into account when determining compensation. And there's another constitutional court case which is called the Hafeji case, which deals with the issue of compensation as to when do you deal with the issue of compensation. Either at the beginning, is it at the beginning or at the end? And the case says it is not prescribed. You can deal with compensation at any stage, but it is advisable to deal with it before, at the beginning of the process and so on. So there are guidelines in terms of case law. What would trigger an expropriation? What would lead to an organ of state to decide to expropriate? That's the question. We have indicated that organs of state can only expropriate for a public purpose or in the public interest in terms of a law of general application. So those are the parameters. Once you fall outside the parameters, those parameters, then you start trading on the territory of acting arbitrarily and without any authority, because you have no legal basis for taking any kind of decision around expropriation. So the guideline would be public purpose, public interest, a legal instrument. Examples of public interest we've indicated, I mean public purpose, we've indicated roads, bridges, hospitals, power stations, land reform cases, and even public purpose. I remember there's a case that there's a matter that the Department of Public Works handled on behalf of SANParks, where SANParks had requested, they wanted to expand the Marakele National Park, and they requested Public Works to expropriate a farmer adjacent to the farm. And Public Works looked into the request, did the due diligence, and at the end of the day decided that it was in the public interest to do that on behalf of SANParks. Of course, SANParks acting in terms of their legislation when they made that request. And then that expropriation was done on behalf of SANParks. So it has happened to extend a national park. An example would be Marakele National Park. What happens if you do not want to sell and so forth? Again, I would refer to an instance which is no longer applicable that I know in the land reform program, because I also worked there for a considerable time. In the Restitution Act, for instance, there were certain requirements before it was amended. There was a requirement that you needed to get what was called a feasibility certificate. In other words, the department was required, after doing all this investigation and so on, to issue a feasibility certificate that it was feasible to acquire a particular identified property for restitution purposes. And because that resulted in, those affected using that as an opportunity to delay and challenge the department and so on, at some stage that provision was also taken out of the Restitution Act. But that is just to illustrate that there was some kind of on the part of the department, a requirement that you needed to do your due diligence, but also that the affected party could respond by using the very same tool to impede the processing of a claim and so on. And there was also a provision in that act that all claims, even where you reach agreement, had to be referred to the Land Claims Court. And the Land Claims Court had to issue a court order that the claim was settled. But that is no longer a requirement that all claims should be referred to the Land Claims Court. Only those that are in dispute get referred there. And then the next question is, I think this one, who qualifies for expropriation? I think I've answered that one. And then the next one is the costing, the budget. Again, I'm going to try my best. I'm not saying I'm giving the right answer. We will recall that expropriation has been there. Actually, even before the 1975 Act, there was a 1960-something Act, Expropriation Act. So it's a very old process that has always been there. And this bill is just an improvement on that process, just to align it to the Constitution. And as we have already indicated, you have organs of state that use this mechanism or a tool to achieve their certain of their functions in an expedited manner. And you know that the power can only be used by the state. Expropriation is a power that is only available to the state, and no private person can use expropriation. So when, for instance, my colleague has asked about, you know, when they want to expropriate for road purposes. So ordinarily, in the normal course, they would budget for that program, the roads program. They wouldn't budget for expropriation. So in all other organs of state, that is how it will work. Because expropriation would be a tool for you to achieve the reason you were established. So, for instance, the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure would have to expropriate to acquire accommodation to meet the accommodation needs of client departments. That is the function of the Department of Public Works. But then you'd have ESCOM coming saying, in the current unamended version of the Electricity Regulation Act, we would want you to expropriate a particular piece of land on our behalf. The process is that ESCOM would have to provide the wherewithal for Public Works to do that. Or if Public Works does that, Public Works claims that money from ESCOM. So ESCOM must budget for its own needs. So each organ of state would have to budget for their own purposes. If education wants to expropriate for their own capital program to build a school and so on, it would have been budgeted for that they are going to build at a particular stage and so on. But then for them to expedite the process, because it's taking forever to talk to the owner of the property, they must just use this drastic measure, which is only used under certain strict conditions for them to achieve the objective they would have budgeted for. So I don't think there would be a separate budget for expropriation anyway. Every budget would have been the normal budget for a program of an organ of state. This would just be a tool to achieve the purposes of that program. Yeah, I suppose those are the questions that...
Thank you very much. Just maybe the last clarity, so I understand the last response. So this bill, with with what you've been saying about there won't be any budget or any, what is it that is fixing, because that has been happening, where the road had to happen, there'll be negotiation from the department to whoever who is affected by where the planning is going to happen. Now, if we bring it in, and what is it that is being fixed from the old practice? Because you, from when I was listening to you, were saying that, remember, that has been happening before. That is why there's no allocated budget for the new system that you're going to put in place with this framework. Now, what are we fixing? If we go out there to the communities, what is it that we're saying we are going to tweak to make it work for the government?
No, thank you, Chair. Yeah, Chair. Firstly, thanks for the answers. Yeah, I will take the answers with the spirit that it comes from, and because we still have to go to continue public participation, and everybody's going to have their views. Hence, when I started, I say it's just clarity-seeking questions, so that I'm clear. Let us go to a practical example where a person has agreed with the process that this particular land has been expropriated because there is a public interest, and the compensation amount. Firstly, if I, as Member Sileku, says what you have said I should get, I don't agree with, is there a remedy for me to have a counter offer? That is the first one. And secondly, when you are compensating me, are you also paying for my tractors and my whatever is on that particular land to go from point A to point B? Those are just two questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Just on the issue of, and I'm not sure, forgive me if I missed it, whether there's case law. Courts have taken the decision that land can be expropriated with no compensation or without compensation. And the reason why I'm asking that particular question, and I know that banks and other institutions basically have raised their concerns about expropriation without compensation, is that, and that's the question that many persons is asking, whether people should be compensated for land that they have acquired unjustifiably. That's why I've asked that particular question, and I've specifically called out the advocate there at the back, whether he maybe have an answer, whether there was such judgments that speaks to no compensation, because the current model of willing buyer, willing seller, and you will see even that landowners inflated their prices. And we have seen that even, after 2012, the establishment of the Office of the Evaluator General, that even if the valuation is at this amount, you will still find that inflated prices where landowners said, but this is the amount of money that I want. So the question is based on a question that's been asked by most people in this country, whether people should be compensated for land that they have acquired unjustifiably. The restitution, and I know there was a court case basically, and the court case says that you cannot deal with new claims unless you've dealt with those before. Claims that have been submitted before the cutoff date, 30 or 31st of December 1998. Unless you write directly to the minister, that's not new claims. It came after 1998. The court have said, first deal with those before you deal with new claims. Unless you write directly to the minister and explain why they should give
attention to a new claim that came after 1998. This particular bill, will it assist? And I hear what your response was in terms of the cut-off date, 1913. You cannot go beyond because you will be uncertain who owns land before that. Although Khoisan, the son and the Khoi, and I've seen some of the summits, they got, for instance, all this papers and the speech to the acres of land that they have owned and so forth. But it happens before 1913, and therefore they can't claim. Whether this particular bill will assist them, that's the one. I'm still asking that question. And secondly, will it assist those who basically failed to submit claims before the 1998 cutoff date? Because there's so many people after 1998 cutoff date that still wants to submit claims. Whether this bill will assist them, or will you still have to comply with a court judgment that says that you cannot submit new claims until you have dealt with those that have been submitted before 1998. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think maybe the most important question also is the alignment between this bill to the land reform, land restitution, because my understanding is this bill talks to for when the government has a purpose for an identified land parcel, that there is a, whether you want to build a school or you want to do a hospital or the road or the any infrastructure that has to do with the government, that's where the expropriation is empowering the department to implement those projects that are in the planning. But now, what we are trying to find, and I think it's where Member Maran comes in and say, where you have identified and already there is a land claim that is attached to that, how does this address that to align it to that now? The empowered minister for the expropriation with maybe the compensation that will be on table versus what the land claim from individuals or an individual, and you find that maybe you'll find in monetary value there is a difference. How is this going to assist, or how is that going to be handled by the government?
You want to?
No,
you
can
go. Okay. The first question is why this bill? What are we fixing? Let us cast our minds back a bit to the 1975 Act. You will recall that during the application of the 1975 Act, that is before 1994, we had homelands, self-governing territories, and so forth, using their own laws and so on. Come 1994, the 1975 Act became the law for the entire territory of South Africa, the national law for the entire territory of South Africa. And you'd realize that obviously it is an old piece of legislation that does not take into account the requirements of the Constitution. It is out of touch with the Constitution. Firstly, in terms of the administrative justice provisions. Secondly, in respect of the aspect of public interest. The 1975 Act does not contain the requirement of public interest. It deals only with public purpose. Thirdly, also in respect of the aspect of access to courts,
the 1975 Act creates its own mechanisms on how issues of, disputes would be dealt with and so on. In terms of this bill, we are trying to create a framework, a streamlined framework, in terms of the procedures that an expropriating authority can use when they expropriate for their own purpose. And earlier, I made an example of the restitution program, and I indicated that they have developed their own process. So this is a framework that guides, expropriating authority. It is in the mold of another legislation that I can give you, which is a framework piece of legislation, would be the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, which is just a framework act that guides, organs of state on how to deal with each other, under what circumstances, in order to improve efficiencies and cooperation and so on. So this one also is in that mold to say these are the broad steps that you must follow when you do a needs assessment, when you issue a notice of intention to expropriate. This is what you have to look into to follow. When you issue a notice of intention to expropriate, when you withdraw an expropriation, when you do an urgent expropriation, this is what you must do and so on. Because in most pieces of legislation, they do not set out what must happen in an expropriation. They only contain an empowering provision. You just find, let's say you find a piece of legislation dealing with education matters. And just in the middle of that legislation, you find an expropriation provision that says the Minister of Education is empowered to expropriation for education purposes, full stop. And then it continues dealing with other education matters. So that is how most pieces of legislation are framed. And expropriating authorities who manage those pieces of legislation, in my view, are not stopped from developing their own processes to expropriate for education purposes. So long as that complies with the Framework Act, it is in line with the Framework Act. Or if they want to, they can use the Framework Act directly. And I've given the restitution, in terms of the restitution, to say there's only one, Section 42E, which grants the Minister of Rural Development. Actually, it says, I don't know if it's amended, it used to say Minister of Public Works, but when it's for land reform, it's the Minister of Rural Development. And then they develop their own process on how you go about doing an expropriation. They've never come to the Minister of Public Works to request an expropriation because they've got their own elaborate process of performing an expropriation. So this legislation is important because it ensures that organs of state complies in many respects with the Constitution and creates a uniform process on how we go about undertaking an expropriation. In a nutshell, that is the importance of having this piece of legislation. There is another question about a counter offer. whether whether the question was, is there provision for a counter offer in the bill? If I recall, the earlier versions had an express reference to counter offers, and I think at some stage when the processes were aligned, council advised that we should take that out and so on. But even if there's no express reference to counter offer, clause 2 of the bill requires parties to negotiate before the power of expropriation can be invoked. And obviously, parties would give each other an opportunity, even if there's no law that says you must do it, to give it a counter offer. Obviously, if I say, I offer you 100 times, go and think about it whether you accept or not, you can come back and say, no, look, I think I can look at it if you improve here and there. And obviously, that is a counter offer. If you say I must improve my offer here and there, and, you know, with these permutations and so on, that amounts to a counter offer. So indirectly, I could say there is room for counter offer and so on, but maybe we may have to, if we still have time, maybe look at how perhaps if it's really, there's a need really to have an express reference to counter offers, maybe to bring back the provision. I don't think there'll be any harm to have an express reference to the issue of counter offers. The other question is about whether the bill will assist the Khoisan and those who fail to assist the restitution claims. As I indicated, this is the framework piece of legislation that applies to all organs of state. So the restitution program is just one organ of state amongst a myriad of other organs of state. So that is why the bill does not refer directly to areas, functional areas of legislative competence of other organs of state, because they must do that in terms of their own legislation. So this matter is a matter that the Department of Rural Development and land reform must deal with in terms of their own legislation. Not this legislation will not assist in that process. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. Member America?
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And again, HOD?
Chair, if I may be so, well, you may please rule me out of order if I may have a second bite at the cherry. Thank you very much. So going back to the definitions within this Act, and everywhere it refers to property, and the definition for property refers you back to the Constitution, Section 25, which in turn also says, of course, that property is not limited to land. And so there previously have been questions around intellectual property that people have acquired and developed and that by implication own, the fact that property could be a value of a company that somebody owns. And seeing as property is not limited to land, but when you read a lot of the content of the bill, it's referencing things like valuations, capital improvements, which once again go back to the construct of property, being land, potentially buildings, etc. So just a question, if I may, as to why, how the consideration was within the bill then by correctly and understandably going back to the Constitution's definition of property, but the manner in which the bill has been formulated for aspects around compensation and others tends to put you back into a property, land and building discussion. And I just wondered whether there has been any consideration if there was an intent to look at expropriating property that is not land or building, how that would be covered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Over to you, sir.
That's a thought-provoking question. We were aware when we started with this project that it could turn out this way, but at the time we could not conceptualize of a concrete situation where other forms of property could play themselves out in practice. Hence, we only dealt with, the 99.9% of those instances of corporeal property that organs of state deal with. Hence, we found ourselves, back to, remember that, we had to be somewhat be forward-looking and also make room for the concept of property as envisaged in the Constitution. The constitutional property is no longer the private law type of property as we knew it. So that is why we there was no other way to define property than, to go with the constitutional concept. So, yes, you are correct. We found ourselves hovering around the normal types of property as we know them. But we are very much aware that there are other forms of property which really practically we have not seen themselves out, play themselves out in. Well, there are cases. For instance, there are cases around licensing, the fact that a license is another form of property, things around, pensions, a pension is a form of property, and so forth. But I think at this stage of the development of our law, we have not really come to a situation where we could say there should be legislative policy in the form of, because that's my view, that the law as it stands now can maybe deal with those situations satisfactorily because it's dispute between private persons most of the time, other than, where it has got to do with, issues of public interest. Thank you.
Chair, if I perhaps may give an example. So historically in the transport space, one might recall when the National Department of Transport and the Road Traffic Management Corporation had to get access to the NATIS information that was held by a private party. And they went through quite a long process to try to argue that that was information that was the state's information. I think there's been a similar incident within the South African Police Services, if I might recall, with databases, information that was held by a private party, that by implication should be seen to be potentially the state's information, but perhaps wasn't formulated sufficiently within whatever contractual arrangements way back when. And so perhaps instead of the state having to purchase that information from the private party, the question might come in, is there room in the manner in which property has been defined that could land up being seen as property that could be expropriated? And where does that then leave you in terms of this process? So that was, as I say, just the reason behind the question. But I understand the answer. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think that was a clarity to that, unless if of National our colleagues, they want to comment again on that. You are okay with it?
Yeah, I think it's sufficient.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, it's.
Okay. Thank you very much. Members, I don't know, are we going to take a bit of a break before we start with Advocate Masdo, or you want us to continue? Member Madam?
Continue.
We continue. Okay. Thank you very much. I am now going to allow Advocate Masdo to give us his, like we normally do. We want to hear your voice about this bill. You know, you do have something to say to us.
Chairperson, I was not aware that I needed to address this committee. But since you are the chairperson, I will oblige you, except to say I should actually thank my colleagues from the National Department for their input. And just having listened to the colleague, for my own purposes, I needed to understand where does this bill fit into the general scheme of things, and I needed to simplify it for myself, and I come to the following. That as we normally have bills, it provides an enabling instrument, and subsequently, the bill itself provides for an executive authority, for example, a minister, to make regulations on the how of a bill. The beauty about this instance is that our constitution is that enabling instrument. And this bill, in its general purport, gives us the how. So as my colleague has correctly framed it, it is a framework. It has general it has a general holding of the hand characteristic. But it also allows for individual expropriating authorities to craft their own specificities to give effect to this bill within the framework of the bill. That's all I can say to that, Chair. I must just maybe round up by saying that having just perused the bill for purposes of this committee's meeting, I have not at first glance detected anything that screams unconstitutional. If anything, the bill embroiders on the spirit and the administrative justice purposes that is envisaged in the Constitution, as opposed to creating unconstitutional mechanisms or provisions. I'm quite comfortable that the bill is in its current form, is sufficiently sound. I say its current form. I'm sure as we go forward and have the benefit of submissions from the broader public with their own lenses and their own interests, one would want to test the bill's integrity. So I'm hopeful, going forward that will assist to have a more emphatic and conclusive characterization of the bill as constitutional. I did also read the submission by Advocate Naidu that was made to the NCOP, and certain issues were raised which, in my view, are not that substantive or profound to justify any response now, except that even that submission did not raise anything substantive. Some issues were raised, but not substantive to scream unconstitutional. Thank you, Chair. That's all for me.
Thank you very much. Just a quick one for me. This bill now, if you come to a scenario where you have to, a department have to refer to the Minister of Infrastructure, do we have the time limit for the Minister of Infrastructure to respond, as you do have the time frames for expropriation, that it must happen within a certain period, like maybe on the agent, the agent expropriation? And I'm saying this because we had a experience of the water licensing. It will end up with the Minister of Water, and it will be on the table for a very long time. Now, I want to find out, is there some on the bill where it says that when referred to the Minister of Infrastructure, the response must be within a certain period of time, or you didn't put that in place in the bill to give that framework to be inclusive of the timelines as you put them into the bill?
I'm not certain if I'm following Chairperson, but my sense is that we did not, the bill does not go to such specifics, such level of specifics. To me, it sounds more administrative, sort of in terms of, where a request was rooted to the wrong person, and subsequently, maybe after a year, it finds its way to the correct person. Maybe I may be wrong, but I'm not sure if I know.
No, I don't know. Maybe if I'm asking it, okay for you to understand what I was trying to find. So, you are going to build a school, and for whatever reason, not the Minister of Education implementing the project doesn't get it correct for the expropriation process, and then goes to the Minister of Infrastructure to help in that expropriation, to take over that process. Now it moved from Minister to the Minister of Infrastructure. Now I want to find out if referred to the Minister of Infrastructure, as you have this is a framework. Much as the department, there will be the systems in place. Now, if you're going to put in the Minister of Infrastructure, do we have the timeline for him in making sure, because remember on the APP, Minister of Education said, I'm going to build a school strategic plan of about 5 years now, or 10 years. Now, if you have another minister after the minister that has to run that process of the expropriation, I'm asking if he has or she has the time frame for to run that process, or it doesn't have, because it's not about administration. It's giving the guideline to say, if I'm planning as a Minister of Education or for Health, how much time must I put into my plan for that school or for that clinic, considering that I still have to get the Minister of Infrastructure to try to take a portion of the timeline for expropriation of for a particular land parcel where I'm going to implement that project?
Chair, I think the bill, as it stands, is silent on those timelines because the emphasis is on the investigation that has to happen depending on the aspects relating to that particular property. So that is what will determine, because then that is what then the minister, in terms of even a due diligence, when the request is made, saying, has it followed the, is there a report in terms of, if it's identification for public interest, even to validate that, has that been done? So it would, then the timeframes between the interministerial engagement would not be prescribed at this level. Because then it also assumes that a property would be different. It could be movable, immovable. Even if it's immovable, there would be different categories in terms of ownership and the process. So it, all that is required is to say the expropriating authority, have they done thorough investigation, but also a clear demonstration in terms of saying if it's a public interest, can that really stand the test of ground? So it would rather not then prescribe those timelines. I hope that provides clarity.
Thank you very much. Members, the last one from me. Any recommendations that you received from the provinces, because Western Cape is just indicated they did send, is there any other provinces that did submit and were they considered in this bill, or what was the process for the finalization before it came through to us? Did you consider another provinces or no province submitted, and that is why there's no any response to Western Cape?
There was a public participation process. The bill was gazetted and comments were invited. And we also had interactions with specific identified organs of state. And if you go back in time, if you follow the history of this bill, you'd recall that it was in Parliament before and was rejected by Parliament because otherwise it was going to expire. And then there was now that this, we were given a time frame that it came back from Parliament, I think it was in September, if I recall the month, and then we were told that in October it has to be back in Parliament. And something was happening nationally, I can't recall, because there was a delay, I think, until December, I think. Was it the elections? Yes.
Yeah,
it was the elections. Yes, and then around that time elections happened, and that caused delays, and I think it was again in January or February of the following year that we again were under pressure that this bill must be back in Parliament, and we also had to go back to NEDLAC to consult with NEDLAC and so on. So I must be honest that during this round of consultations on this bill, we may not have comprehensively covered all the interested parties as we would have done previously with the previous process. There may be other parties that may not have been taken on board. But in the previous process, because it's the same continuous process, all the submissions that were done with taken into account, because I remember we had compiled a list persons who made submissions, and we had a table of who made submissions and so on. I'm not sure in that table whether the Western Cape appears, but probably we will look at in our records for the submission.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will appreciate if we can get the information of whether they were considered, because and I'll talk to the members to hear, because we will be interested to know what was the Western Cape saying to about this bill from, because since they are going to also be responsible as a province to develop their own policy to activate, to work with that framework that you come with. So that will be another person. I'm a little bit worried, this chairperson, with the time frames that you're giving to us. As the bill itself, every municipality will have to, we have to go and see that for the public hearings, the communities get to contribute to this. And the time frames, so for now, I was looking at the time frames that our procedural officers giving to us. We cannot shortchange it. We still have to go and look at how are we going to work with our 30 municipalities and make sure that there's no any other Auntie Sarah or Professor so-and-so that is excluded in the process of contributing to this process. So that has to be kept in mind, but I'm going to talk to the members just now so that we can see. I suspect we are going to request a bit of an extra time for us when we do the public hearings, but we'll communicate that with you. Shamis, with that being said, I can release and then stay with the members for the planning. From the department, Judy, thank you very much. And from national colleagues, thank you for assisting us in this bill to get the clarity for it. And from premiers and Advocate Master, I really appreciate you guys for coming and engaging with us about this bill. I'm going to release you so that we can start with the procedure. But only the PO online, don't go away. We are going to have a chat with you. So Advocate Masdorp, you are not going to leave us also, so that you can check if the legality of some of the things that we want to do from the provincial parliament. Thank you very much. Do you have coffee for our guests? In the members' lunch, there is coffee. And I don't do wasteful expenditure, so before you go, just grab a coffee because I called you this morning to come in person. And I will appreciate if you can just enjoy it while we continue with the members. Members, are you... we are going to continue. You want to go and grab coffee a bit. Member, bring it. Democracy in my committee. Coffee or you are fine. Member Maran? Is that it? Member Maran, do you need your coffee? We have to do the plannings of this. We don't have another day. So it might be we'll take about an hour or two. Take a break. Okay, what time do we come back? Bible. Okay. Can we make it 15:15? Okay. Thank you very much. Let's suspend the committee until 11:15. Thank you very much. to determine the way forward on the bill. First thing, it will be about the advertisement to identify where are we going to advertise. Now, the tricky part of it here, usually we work with the stakeholders to identify the stakeholders and say we are going to add, we are going to communicate with them directly for their contribution or for their submission. Now, this bill, it takes from Auntie Sarah to the business people maybe, and so it affects each and every individual within our province. So that means dependency have to be on advertisement to make sure that our communities, they know what is coming. Saying that, dependency, more dependency from this institution will be on the PEO about this bill. So I'm going to, just for a few minutes, pause and ask the PEO. I tend to believe they got the invitation and they know about the bill to hear when we do a way forward from the members, what contribution are they going to make to do, or what are the avenues they can tap into to make sure that each and every municipality, each and every individual within the communities, they know about this bill for the public hearings. I saw Kaya Letu online.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I'm here on behalf of the PO unit. Through you, Chair, if maybe I may respond to the questions that you posed. Yes, we have now been informed about the bill and the intention by the Standing Committee to go on public hearings. Our approach, Chair, to public hearings would be depending on the areas where the committee decide to go to, we will reach out to our colleagues that normally assist us, you know, in the municipalities, the community development workers, but also some of the stakeholders that we have on our database that might be interested on the bill, to create awareness, but also, Chair, to coordinate participation on the day. So normally we would work with the procedural officer once we have identified that there is an interest to coordinate the issue of transport, pick up points, and then just get the people to participate. We will also, where applicable, Chair, you know, reach out to the two song centers to ask them, you know, to put this on their notice board in a bid to create awareness. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I just want to find out from you, is it possible from the Standing Committee side to expedite you to do more than that? Because identify, like when I started that, it's difficult for us to identify stakeholders because this bill affects every person. It might affect every person in the province. So that means the awareness of the bill for contribution, we will be dependent on your department to make sure they go out there. But I don't think that involving the CEDWs, it is a problem. But it comes to the details of that involvement. What is your expectations from the CEDW? To what an extent does the CEDW would manage to make sure that the communities, they know about this for their submissions? Because I remember that the last time we had a system that you'll go and you'll talk about the bill, what does it mean and why is it important for our communities to come and do the submissions. Now, if that is going to be dependent on the CEDW, it's going to be difficult to also get the feedback as you engage, because before we go for the public hearings, we are going to engage with you to tell us what is the feeling, what to expect, so that our plannings in different towns talk to the needs or the demands that might be there as we do the public hearing. So if you are going to use the CDW, how are we going to make sure that we get the right information as a standing committee to do the right thing as we move out to go for the public hearings?
Thank you, Chairperson. Through you, Chair, normally what we would do, Chairperson, once we have reached out to the municipalities, stakeholders and colleagues, and we normally get an invite from the stakeholders if they need support in terms of the actual process of public hearings, just to prepare them in terms of the actual public hearings and maybe just to explain to them the concept, I mean, or the objects of the bill or what the bill will be focusing on. But also, Chair, I think if it is the interest or it is what the committee would desire, we can go in the areas. Normally we do that a week before time just to create awareness. So we'll hold, for example, a pre-hearing session which normally focuses on how, you know, to structure a submission and how just to give a guidance in that respect, but also just to provide the communities then the opportunity to look at the bill. So, Chair, my answer is if that is what the committee then would want or expect of us, we will be able to do that and then provide the feedback to the standing committee.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that's, in principle, that's what we wish to see, that you go raise awareness as the PO and in different municipalities. And also from your side, we'll appreciate their transport for the public hearings, to transport people to come for the public hearings. So if we can, we will communicate with you after we are done with the members to say by when will we appreciate to get the details of the engagement, where are you going to be, and also the your plans.
That will... thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Members from the PEO side, any addition that maybe you want to see from them? Or member, I'm going to take member, Brain Case member, Sean and member.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, on that, there is more than 25 municipalities in the Western Cape. Isn't it more appropriate that we go in terms of public participation district-wise? The districts, if I'm correctly, is approximately 5 or 6 districts. Wouldn't that also cover the Western Cape if we go in terms of districts? To the public. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. We'll get there. For now, I just wanted to hear for PO just to unpack it nicely. So, let's hear from PO first.
Chairperson, the awareness. I want to know, or I'd like to know, do they put it out on social media and zoom into that specific area? Because you can do the radius, kilometer radius of that specific municipality just to speak to those individuals in that municipality. Does the PO do their office do that, or is it something that they still need to explore?
Thank you very much. Member Selego.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think, Chair, one, just for advice to Kailitu as well, I think some of municipalities are currently engaging on report back meetings, IDP meetings. Maybe if you want to raise awareness, maybe we should or they should also try to slot into that. So when they are doing that, just to also allow themselves space. But I don't know, because there are about 30 municipalities. And also what is important in terms of raising the awareness, one would have to use the local radio stations a lot, because I think in most areas you'll find a lot of radio stations. And unfortunately, and there might be a challenge in terms of language, because in Grabo, if you want to go to Daisa, then you must be Afrikaans, English, and it's a course. So there is a lot of avenues. You can go to Garden Route. You can go to the West Coast. You can go to the Metro. You know, there is radio stations for the awareness. Because at the end of the day, what one wants to see when we engage with public is the input that will assist us in actually making a decision as to whether the bill is supported or is not supported. But if you don't raise the awareness in terms of what is it the bill seeks to achieve, then when you come to the meetings, it renders the exercise very, you know, futile, because you'll find the input coming in not actually adding value, you know, in terms of what you want to achieve. So awareness is very much important, and one would have to go through it per municipality, you know, if you want to add value. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Member Maran.
Thanks, Chair. I fully agree with what the previous speaker has said, but just in terms of the processes that the municipality follows, because they are currently in that phase where they are on a consultation process in terms of the budget that needs to be approved for their financial year, is that, and I'm going to make an example, for instance, Breda Valley got 21 wards, and they go from ward to ward. And I don't think basically that we want to do, because if we want to slot into municipalities progress in terms of their public participation process, and it means that we will go to 21 wards in one municipality. So my suggestion will be, Chair, that we got, for instance, one metro, five districts.
Oh.
Yeah, and then local municipalities, whether there's a possibility that we can cluster two municipalities per session. For instance, Rede Valley and Langeberg is close to each other. Whether we can have that, Witzenberg and Drakensberg is not that far from each other. Whether we can have that particular process in cluster those municipalities, meaning that we might have around about like 16, 15 public participation processes. But in terms of what he raised, the other issues, I fully agree and support that. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think, Kaya, you were listening, né, on the ideas that the members were sharing with you.
Yes, Chairperson, I have noted down the suggestion, in particular the IDP meetings.
Yeah.
Maybe just to comment on that one, Chair. Normally, we work with the public participation practitioners from the municipalities, and they will then be able to assist us in terms of communicating. I think where possible, Chair, we welcome the suggestion. We'll explore the idea of IDP meetings. But I think then in terms of social media and radio, I'll hand over to my colleague Matthijs, because that falls outside of our scope as PO.
Okay. I was also going to, I requested that he also gets in, because from him we are going to need the online. But before I continue, let me hand it over to you to hear what are you going to contribute to this bill.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Thank you for the opportunity. As I listen to everything that was said this morning, the need is to cast as wide a net as we can. So therefore, I would suggest a number of ways that we can also support the other PEO actions that's more maybe on ground level. So here is what I would suggest for us to do. The first thing is that on the WCPP website, on the homepage, we can create a central point of information of the bill. In other words, in that point of information, you can access the bill and also the form to indicate if you would like to make a submission. And it's also up to the committee if they want to ask specific questions from the public there. So in other words, like an online questionnaire, that is a possibility that can be investigated. Then, as per normal, We will, as soon as you have the green light and give us the green light, we'll do a general media release. That release will be accompanied by voice clips, maybe from you, Chair, and if there's need, perhaps from other members, perhaps to cover the other languages as well. And then we can send that out to also to cover radio stations. The thing is that that will be followed up with media alerts per specific public hearing. In other words, for instance, if it's covering a specific region, it will be covered with a media alert for that area specifically. And we'll also try to arrange for interviews with local radio stations to create more awareness in a specific district about a public hearing. Then another exciting way of reaching the public that we only started implementing last year is to do paid for advertising on Facebook. And as one of the members mentioned, is that gives you the opportunity to target specific target groups that you would like to reach. So in other words, by district, age groups, whatever. But yeah, as I say, I read into this that this is a very wide net that we want to throw out there. But yeah, that can be done, and that budget for that Facebook advertising lies with communications. So to give you an idea, we recently did a Facebook advertising campaign for SOPA, and we reached 1 million+ people with that message for 10,000 Rand. So it's really value for money, and you can cast a very big net. So that is all these things, I think, work together. We will always reason that there's people that maybe not have access to social media, but then we try to accommodate them in another way. Then on our social media platforms, Twitter and Facebook specifically, we'll again do general posts about the bill, linking that messages to the website that I mentioned in the beginning, so that people then can access all the information on our website. And then again, before each public hearing, we can then also put out social media posts to inform the public. And then what we'll do with those social media posts is we'll link the municipalities in that area as well. They normally assist us by reposting their social media for us to reach their communities and so on. And then what I also thought of, but that we can also do is we can create posters that we can send to municipalities, also to create awareness more on a local level. That's from my side, Chairperson. I don't know if there's any questions.
Thank you very much. There's no any question, and I think that will work, and we appreciate that. Another thing online, I'm just guessing that you are also going to allow the link for the online voice notes, the WhatsApps, and the online submission, the email online submissions. Is that going to be in order with you?
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that will cover the for WCPP and the PO. both departments from communication. Thank you very much, Darcy. Really appreciate it. Members, now the newspapers. We have to identify the advertisement of the newspapers, of which I suggested that we are going to also target the local newspapers. And for the city, I think communication, Mr. Mathis, if you can help us identify the local newspapers and how many, and those radio, can we throw that into your domain?
Yes. Okay. I will help assist you with that information, Jefferson.
Okay. Thank you very much. I will appreciate that. And also to have the big newspapers, Shamis. Let me check on my...
No, but I just where we go and which newspapers.
Yeah, we will. We'll get there. So for the mainstream newspapers, we identified from the West Coast, there's few of them. Shumiz will share that with you, members. There's a lot of...
Put them on the screen.
Yeah, if you can put them on the screen so that the members can have a look. So we identify the West Coast, all the newspapers that are there, the Cape Winelands, the Overbeck, like the Garden Road, and Central Karoo, and the city of Cape Town, and the most popular local newspapers that we have identified. But going for the public hearings, we are going to have 16, which it will be, we are going to group Neisner and Plettenberg Bay together. George will be alone. Mossel Bay will be on its own. Oudtshoorn will be on its own because of the distance. Hessequa will be on its own because of the distances and the transport that has to be arranged by PO for us. Swellendam also will be on its own. Overstrand and Pier Waterkloof will group them together. And then Brede Valley, it will be on its own. Prince Albert and Lengvek together. Beaufort West on its own. Oh. Yeah, I was looking at the time because we are going to start from 5 until maybe 8. Now, if you are going to get to hire a bus to fetch people from one place to another, you are not going to find them that they are back from work. So the technicality of those people that are at the work, especially in the farming areas, that means you are going to shortchange that. I was looking at the radius of the municipalities if we get people. It's a little bit difficult that how do you go about. Member Maran, then Member
Stiller. Chair, instead of us writing down all these informations, I believe...
We will send it.
You will send it to us, including the issue of newspapers. Who will be the newspapers?
Okay.
The radio station, you will send that information to us.
Yes, Shamis will share it with all of us. But just for agreeing in principle, we put it on the screen there too. Zoom on it. For the plans to be activated. So only Bergrivier and Swartland will be joined together. And your Drakenstein on its own, Saldanha Bay, that site, Matsikama, Aun, and Cedarbeck. Another thing that I was looking at is the past public hearings that were happening on the expropriation. I mean, I was in Cedarbeck. They started at 1 o'clock, but 7, they were still busy. Yeah, so it's not going to be the easy one to go on. Member Seleku, then Member Brinkes.
Thank you, Chair. I see
and Mara.
I see Swellendam there, but I don't see Cape Agulhas.
You don't see Cape Agulhas. Yeah, I missed Cape Agulhas there.
I'm fighting for my
So the more you talk, the more we add.
I don't know whether it's possible to add Cape Agulhas to Swellendam.
So Cape Agulhas to Swellendam. When we think about them, it's going to be difficult. Mm. When you think about them, think you are Cape Agulhas furthest.
Yeah, it is.
And then Swellendam, you are on Road 60. That side. So the transport, where does it go to fetch people? Because we have to get people to come for public and that we are going to allocate the buses also to bring people. One of the things that happened with this bill before was not enough public hearing. So we have to make sure we do it the right way, that we don't have to...
Then you'll have to have come on its own as well.
So we have to increase them.
You have to add come on its own there, then it's going to give us 17.
To add what? Which one?
Come, Cape Agulhas Music.
Okay. Country,
yes.
Cape Agulhas, number 17.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Separate, because it's, the area is too vast.
And also Witzenbeck. Yeah, you add Witzenbeck. Member, bring it.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if the two municipalities is combined, how, on which criteria will we decide the venue? In which one? Well, the
leave it to your capable chair. I'll tell you which criteria I'm going to use. Trust your chairperson.
For example, Swartland in Berthelfield, if you have the public hearing, for example, in Darling, and the people from Velder have to come all the way to Darling.
Yeah, I mean, remember, Brent Case, I'm checking the radius of the different areas, so. We've got the online also. So vetting it goes with the online, where it's possible that you will get the more online or the WhatsApps or and where it might be difficult to get that submissions. So all that you put that in mind and say that there are other avenues that their contribution can happen, and also dependency on the municipalities to make sure that the two song centers also they work. I think what I'm going to add also is to have, if Mr. Mathiesen is still there, if you can have the boxes where the contribution, written contributions in clinics, and we can add to that if that's the case, that we can go to that an extent. But we are going to try very hard to make sure that there's not any town that is going to say that we've been shortchanged, because then that means, again, it will be the bill has to go back again, and the elections is here. The time frame given to us, which is the minimum time that we have to also request extra time. The more we add town, the more we are going to extend to request extra time, because the negotiating mandate have, there's a specific time frame that they have put for the program of this bill for us to send it there. And this has to be as quick, but not shortchange the public hearing per se. Member Seleku and Member Sean, you first, and then Member Seleku.
Chairperson, can you just guide us on time, on the dates that this is going to happen? I'm just thinking ahead of winter and all the public holidays. Is it in here? I didn't
check on your on the last page. The last page, I did put the program of this bill. How is it going to roll out? So this last page from the Parliament of the Republic of Africa that gave us. So the last page you will see the 14th June.
It's the negotiating mandate.
The negotiating mandates have to go in. And the 14th June is just
but
now.
But ours have to be submitted before then.
Yeah. So the NCOP have to submit on that date. That means ours have to go there before the 14th.
So that's part of that program, yeah. Mm. So it's not a lot of time. But
we, that is why I'm saying with that program, it's attached the program to say that with your that's a very huge indulgence for me to write to request the extension, because the time that is allocated versus all the public hearings, there's no way we'll be able to really do that. So the extension is needed. If they decline it or it's up to them, but that means also we'll say it wasn't enough public hearings that we did. We'll have to put it out there that there was not enough public hearings, and there's no bill that will go through without having the legislative prerogative that has to happen. Okay. Oh, the date that Shumit? So the idea is the first
adverts have to go out.
After the adverts, have to go out. No, I want to find the anticipated first public hearing.
I have to sit with Michaela because we're only establishing the areas that we're going to.
Okay. So let's say advertisement, the notices, and the Kaya, how much time do you need for the processes? Johan, sorry, Kaya, before you. Johan Vermeulen, I see your hand.
Hi, Chairperson. Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Yes, Chairperson, I just wanted to mention something. Obviously, I agree with you to write to the NCOP committee dealing with this bill to ask for an extension of time because of the number of public hearings that the committee wants to hold. The only thing that we need to remember, Chairperson, is that it does leave us with a little bit of a catch-22 situation. Because in my experience, when we write to those chairpersons on the other side, it sometimes takes them quite a while to come back and say to us, yes, the extension is granted or it's not granted. So in the meantime, while we're waiting, so we've written a letter, let's say the letter goes to them tomorrow, and that chairperson maybe still has to take that request to his committee, and we don't know when his committee is sitting and whatever. So it gives us a catch-22 in the meantime, because we can't proceed with our advertisements. Because if we want to place one big advertisement to say, look, we are going to have all of these public hearings in these 16 places, but we still don't know if they've granted that extension. It just leaves us in a bit of a catch-22. So I don't know. We must just hope that they respond to us quickly, because a lot of our preparations depends on how soon they respond to us, whether we can now proceed with our advertisements and placing our dates in the newspapers and all of those things. I just thought it was important for me to mention that, Chips, and that we think of that as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. I think it is a scenario where, as the committee, we have to prioritize the response, the timeline of the NCOP or the communities for the public hearings. So if we have to say which... But I'm going to ask Advocate Mazdor in that scenario, how much are we empowered, being what Mr. Vermeulen is saying versus what the members want to achieve in the process for this bill and coming to extension versus if we have to shortchange some other places.
Chairperson, I take my from the reach of the the Doctors for Life case, and without being prescriptive in that judgment, without being prescriptive, the
the guideline that is given is one looks at the nature of the bill that needs to be canvassed, one looks at the time frame, and one then considers what measures in the time frame, and given the purport of the bill, what measures would be reasonable and appropriate to ensure that there is sufficient public participation. Obviously, the committee will never reach every affected person in the province, but the assessment will be based on whether the committee has done sufficient, reasonably sufficient measures to ensure that as many as possible people within the budget have been accessed. And that the conspectus of all those factors, including objective things like timeframes, will then, after the fact, be assessed whether the measures may taken by the committee were reasonable, fair to justify it being typified as sufficient public participation. So there's no hard and fast rule, but it will certainly be assessed on the cumulative factors that have been considered. 15 public participation hearings or public hearings within the budget at first glance seems sufficient. Then again, if one looks at the number of people in the province who may be affected people, 15 is not sufficient. But then one looks at objective things like budget and timeframes. Like I said, there is no hard and fast prescriptive rule.
Principal, I throw it back to us to make a decision. Thank you very much, Advocate Ms. for giving members like you something to tell me.
I wanted to just say. No, I think, Chair, as much as like as the previous speaker has said, you won't be able to reach everyone. Hence, it's important that to use different methods or ways of trying to reach out. And what we have done in the NCOP, we'd always try to run two processes concurrently. You know, we also, especially written submissions, you know, we should also venture into that, make sure there's a lot of, we open that for written submissions, and then we also go the route of public participation as well. I think it would safeguard us should there be any contestation in terms of that we did not follow. And also that in terms of the question that you have raised about whether we should wait for the go-ahead for extension or not, I think what we need to do, we should have put an option A and option B. Should we not get a favorable answer, we start. And, you know, so that we don't wait on the NCOP, because they're waiting for the NCOP, yeah, you know, because you need to look in terms of the implication as well. If you as a Western Cape did not do anything on the bill, they only need 5 provinces to deliberate on this bill or not. So if one province is trying to take its time, there might be a decision that says, no, it's fine. You know, we're not going to give you an extension, and then you will just put your objection and say, no, we are not given enough time. But work continues, you know, and one has to listen also in terms of the presenter saying that this is when the bill was adopted and this is when we expected the bill to be back, you know, and also we are members, legislatures. At the end of the day, we know what is currently happening around us. And yeah, and what I'm trying to say, the chances of us getting an extension, I would say, is 50-50. Thank you.
You are so generous. I know it's 40-60. So yeah, being generous today, seriously. But what is important is that the planning is what we will be sent to you, and the submissions will start immediately. This I wanted to ask Mr. Matthijs and Kaya that when is activation of everything going to happen? How much time are you allocating to yourself to start have that online and also Kaya, your site going to the municipalities to inform our communities with a condensed version of this bill? What does it mean? Which it will be also the same that you will maybe give to the communications, the condensed version, when we expect the submissions from our communities online. How much time frame do you need?
Chairperson, from my side, we normally work on the date that the adverts go to the normal media, the print media, and so we run concurrently so that the we do the same thing but on different platforms at the same time. We need like 3 days when we get the green light and you've got your date settled and everything. But we normally just hold back a bit so that we can give time so that when the message goes out, as per the advertisement in the newspapers, we go social media and we go media release, everything at once.
Thank you very much. So we are going to, Kaya, you will also,
Thank you, Chair. Through you, Chair. For us, Chairperson, the work will start immediately, you know, of creating awareness. There's some certain information that we'll require from Shumis. I've just dropped an email now, basically just requesting the confirmation of the areas and dates. So the process of creating awareness starts now. Maybe, Chair, just one thing that I wanted to highlight, though, looking at the number of public hearings, that the committee is looking at, there might just be a limitation in terms of the pre-hearing sessions, because it would mean that we'll need to go to all the areas. You know, normally we'll transport, you know, provide refreshments for people, but we also need to provide transport on the day of the hearings. But also, Chair, simultaneous with this, we're also supporting the Standing Committee on Transport with the three public hearings, in fact, three legislation that the committee is currently processing. So, yeah, Chair, for us, we'll start immediately in terms of creating awareness. I just thought I should just highlight those limitations as well.
Okay. That will be, it's one of the issues that we'll have to look at. How are we going to go about, which will be maybe a communication through the Standing Committee. They can empower me to speak to the speaker about the allocation of the budget for that. But, okay, I'm going to say the whole process from Monday, the advert for the newspaper can go out. It will be more than 3 days, Mr. Matheson. So Monday also, the social media, that can we work with that day? Janice, happy? Mr. Mate?
I'm in order. It's an order.
Okay.
3 weeks for people to...
So that means it will give 3 weeks to...
Give for people to give comments.
To give comments. It will be throughout until we finish with it.
Access up, hopefully within this
period. So we will work with next week, Monday, we start everything to the advertisements and everything, and then we'll continue monitor that. Members?
Can we look at the newspapers, please?
So can we check the newspapers? If we say Monday, so there's no check them, and then can we agree to that? West Coast, we've got Impact News, Flatland, Jurmal, Vesquez News and Westlanda, Tagabega, Cable View, Dichrendel, Melna 10, Paro. So we need to choose how many? One.
Two.
For Vesquez, I know the Vesquez News is always there.
Yeah.
And Tagabega.
And for one, Cape Winans.
Are you in agreement, members?
Shouldn't we make sure that the newspaper that is chosen, they distribute to all the municipalities?
Difficult to do that task.
I mean, if there's a
we are going to send
between if there's a choice between five or six newspapers, choose the one that distributes the furthest. That's just my.
Yeah, the workers need to distribute feathers, but remember the municipality also, they will have their infographic that's going direct to the municipality. This is addition for the communities as they get that in the in towns. Okay, there's two, Cape Winelands. Remember, you are there, so we take guidance from you. Pal Post, okay. And another one? Worcester Standard.
Okay. Okay,
it's not so many. You've got limited budget, comrade. Okay, so Worcester Standard. Okay, so... Okay.
And
Cape Argus and Cape Town is not that. Yeah. Cape Argus. No.
Not Cape Argus.
Okay. Berger is the one. Oh, okay.
The Berger.
Yeah. The Berger covers everything.
Okay.
Overbeck, remember? Yeah, they. Okay, the Cape Times. Cape Argus. Okay, we'll take Cape Argus then. Okay. No. Overbeck, remember, Selegu, we take guidance from you. No, you have to choose. It's not every newspaper that is there. Choose. Already Cape Argus will be covered, so give me the local ones.
We can do
Hermanus Times.
Okay, and the Daily Voice.
Which one? Rabo Gazette. Okay, thank you very much. Cape Argus, you are covered, all of it, one. There is which one?
We have two, yes, we've got...
You said Rabo Gazette, and then you said the
Hermanus
Times. Which ones are those? So, Solendam, what does Solendam have? The Berger.
We must have the Berger.
Okay, already we have the Berger. Thank you very much. Then it's fine. Okay, move up. Move up for Garden Road.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, the Garden Road, we do have the Bergers there. Bison.
Okay, Bison.
Yeah. Central Karoo. Who knows Central Karoo?
Bison is there already.
Karoo Stem, Onskondre, Korea, which one is
the Berger
is there. The Berger Dison is there.
It's covered, yeah.
It's covered.
Mm-hmm.
Dison, yeah, we do this
one. I think City of Cape Town is
City of Cape Town.
It's covered because the
It's covered yeah. with the...
Argus and Dison and, yeah, unless we do Fukani.
The Mosul Bay advertise. You don't advertise.
Yeah, most of the advertisers. This is the local.
Yeah, the local. That will be all members for the newspapers. And then also we'll identify the radio, the local radio, that Mr. Matthews will do that. Okay. So on the date of the public hearings,
yeah.
Can you trust Chairperson with the date? Okay. Thank you very much. I will sit with you, Miss, and I'll send you the communication. Member Bringes, I'm being trusted very much with this committee. How can I help you, sir?
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, just lastly, one of the public citizens of the Western Cape is present here today with a very important issue. I just wanted to find out from you if you can afford him maybe 2 or 3 minutes to state his case in terms of housing issue and dilemma. Just 2 or 3 minutes. Thanks, Chair.
Member Brengis, you know we've got an agenda of the bill, so I said I will do that. I'll allow him to have time when we are done with the agenda for today. We don't slot in as and when, because members will come prepared for a specific agenda. But as a chair, I will sit down with him after we close the committee so that we can hear and see how we can assist. But for now, let's stick to the agenda, and we'll attend to him. With that being said, members, Shumis will send the dates, and then we will make sure that we work with Michaela to check the available dates also. I'll just go to her just now if she's there to do that. Members, I appreciate your time. Advocate Mazdar, we really appreciate you to walk this thought with us. Asseblief, jy net nou geëet, meneer. No, there's no lunch. There is lunch. Oh, there's... Oh, sorry, there is lunch. I didn't know. My apologies, sir. Okay, like I say all the time, no wasteful expenditure, asseblief, gaan eet. And the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.